Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
So you were at the dentist.
So I'm at the dentist, and I happen to be on my phone looking through some recent signups to Drip, and I notice that there's this email that was suspect. It was like a yahoo.co. something or other, just an email that typically would either be from a spammer or something that we would look at and think that maybe it's not a legitimate account. The bad part is it wasn't just an account that signed up, because I can ban people or make it so that they aren't able to send emails. But the bad part is it basically had admin access to another account. It's actually a company that's located in the same building as us. So I know the owner of that account and the user, main user and stuff. And I was just thinking, it's really odd for them. You know, they have all their employees are in the same building and they typically use the domain of their company for their email addresses. So why would this kind of semi-random person halfway across the world with a yahoo.co. whatever email address have admin access to their thing? And it kind of trips something like, I just wonder if this happens to be someone who like hacked something, if they hacked a query string and figured out a way around some security and it's a security hole. So I email the person who administers their account and he gets right back to me and says, no, I didn't give him access. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh. So I instantly revoke their access. They had only had access to their account for less than, I don't know, maybe 12 hours. And I was just, it was puzzling that I had actually stumbled upon this, right? Just kind of a luck shot. So I email the team, Derek and Ian, and they start running through looking for this person's email, wondering, did they find a security hole? How did they possibly do this? Because we have really, really tight security on that kind of stuff, right? And giving admin access.
So just a practical question. How are you doing all of this while someone's cleaning your teeth?
On my phone, on Slack. And right, so Slack is just chat. And so my phone would buzz and she would turn around to like grab more floss or whatever. And I would like get on my phone real quick and type. And I could tell I was irritating her a little bit, but I was like, I run a software company and something's going on, trying to figure this out. So frankly, I wasn't doing much. I was just messaging with Derek and Ian and saying, hey, are, you know, what's the status, that type of thing. But at a certain point, I had to lay back and she was just buzzing away on my teeth for, I don't know, 15 minutes. And I could feel my phone buzzing, but I couldn't pick it up to look at it. So that wasn't...
And what was going on in your head while that was happening?
I was thinking, man, I really hope that this is not... It could be a fluke. And I actually started thinking, you know, there's two people that I know that work for this company in my building. They both administer the account. Maybe the other one gave them access. And I didn't CC her when I emailed, but it just didn't make a lot of sense that one person would have added, not told the other, and that it would be a yahoo.co. whatever email address. You know, it seemed kind of far-fetched.
Then what happened?
Well, then I actually got up to use the restroom. And of course, I checked all the Slack messages. And sure enough, Derek had messaged one of the other admin. And she said, oh yeah, I had given that person access. I just, you know, hadn't told my co-administrator. Sorry about that. And so it really was not a security hole at all. It was not a big issue. And we just gave that person access again. So it all wound up being good, and it was kind of a big sigh of relief.
But it made for one adrenaline-fueled dentist appointment.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and surprisingly, I mean, I was concerned. I wasn't like flipping out or anything, right? I mean, there are worse things that can happen to your app than a single point of, you know, someone infiltrating. And obviously, it'd be terrible if it happened, but it's not as if someone had grabbed all of our data and exposed it on the internet or something. I mean, if that was it, I would have walked out of the appointment. Like, that's catastrophic business wrecking failure if something like that would have happened. But this was very isolated. I had already looked at signups for the past 10 days. As soon as I saw that, the shaky email didn't have access to any other accounts, and it didn't look like any other accounts had any shaky emails that had access to them. So it really seemed like this incredibly isolated incident, which actually, the more I looked at it, the more I started thinking, maybe this really isn't a security issue, you know, and it just happens to be someone who genuinely gave them access.
This speaks to one of the significant challenges that so many founders face, in that you can be at the dentist, you could be just going about your normal day-to-day life, and something happens and you have like at least this moment of real fear that like something really bad is happening to my company, and it's never off. You're never immune from that kind of fear.
That's right. And I think the best way to deal with that is to learn to put it into perspective and try to gauge how bad is this really? Because there's going to be some bad things that come up, like, wow, our database is slow. A user just emailed and said things are crashing for him or her. We think there might be a spammer has gotten in and sent 200 emails or 500 spam emails, or someone has gotten in and hacked an account. I mean, these are all things that could happen to you. And it's like, you have to be able to, those are not all the same urgency. Those should not produce the same amount of adrenaline in you. And you have to be able to prioritize and kind of move some up the scale to where it's like, I would walk out of a dentist appointment versus my team is on it and we're going to get it done as soon as we can type level. Or even something like, it can wait till tomorrow. I mean, all these things, I think being able to prioritize those in your own mind can help not wreck a family vacation if it happens, or it can just help not ruin your day, frankly, if you're able to kind of compartmentalize those things and really give an honest kind of stress level or urgency level to them.
And this is a good intro into our topic for today, which is essentially when crappy things happen. And having this go down at the dentist this morning was minor stress in the scheme of things. But as we've been working on the co-founder series, simultaneous to that, there's been a pretty big stressor happening in your life. So we thought that it would be helpful to sort of talk through that today, both to talk about the content of this stressor and what it might mean for other founders, and to talk about some of the ways that you coped with it, or that we coped with it as a family.
Yeah, the funny thing was, is this morning, as we're going through this, you know, potential security issue, I actually thought to myself, you know, this sure isn't as bad as that email I got 3 weeks ago. Those exact words went through my head. And that's the incident you're referring to, was when it was like a Wednesday afternoon and I opened my email and there's a subject line that says XYZ company v the Numa Group. And I was like, what is that? That sounds like, I don't know, like versus? Are we fighting it out in a pit fight? Is it like some kind of...
Is it a soccer match or...
Yeah. I mean, it literally, you know, you see that and oftentimes you'll see so-and-so v so-and-so and it winds up being it's like a class action lawsuit, and you're going to get $9 if you fill out some form on something because you were a customer of AT&T 3 years ago. And that's genuinely what I thought it was, until I opened the email and I was like, why is my company name in that? Why would somebody, what do you mean V? I'm not involved in a lawsuit. Like, who would possibly sue me? And so I opened the email and it is a patent troll that had filed a suit against the Numa Group. I just couldn't believe it. Right? Like, why would someone sue me out of the blue for nothing?
Most people who are in this industry know what a patent troll is. But for those of you who don't, why don't you walk us through what a patent troll is?
Patent troll is also known as a non-practicing entity, and it essentially means someone who owns patents and is not doing anything with them. So they might own patents for different types of software, but they're not making software, they're not selling software, they're literally just the shell company that owns a few patents, or maybe hundreds or thousands. They often will acquire patents from other companies that are basically going out of business, or they'll acquire them from an inventor who filed it and never did anything with it. And the bad part is they get these software patents that are super general, that any software developer, if they looked at it, they'd say, well, yeah, obviously, we all build stuff like that. So these patent trolls have these patents on ridiculous things like any website that sells physical goods, right? So it's like, well, wait, isn't that Amazon and everyone else?
So what patent were they accusing you of breaching?
They specifically had, I mean, this was kind of the punchline to it, is they have a patent on any web-based billing software. Like, if you have invoicing software that runs on the internet, you essentially violate their patent, which is insane, right? I mean, there are hundreds, if not more than hundreds, of apps that do this. And yet somehow someone granted them a patent at some point. Someone granted someone a patent at some point, and now these guys own it. And I don't know what they do if they go to Google and just search, but they sue hundreds of companies at a time. And like the most non-practicing entities or patent trolls, they're just trying to get a quick settlement. They want you to write them a check so that they will withdraw their lawsuit.
So you got this email a couple of weeks ago and you came home and you were pretty shaken up. Like, you were pretty upset about what this might mean for your company and the potential risk involved.
Yeah, the bummer was when I first opened it, I was kind of freaked out because I was concerned that it was going after like our actual money earner products, but it was going after this old product called .NET Invoice that it just doesn't really make any money. And so I kind of rolled my eyes like, really? You're suing after that? Because it just doesn't, there's nothing there, right? There's no money to be gained from that. And I since have learned that as a rule, these patent lawsuits really can only take a percentage of the gross earnings from the product that infringed the patent. So that actually helped me feel a little better, to be honest.
So in retrospect, obviously, this is no longer a crisis. But the original fear, though, was that not only was the patent violation going to affect .NET Invoice, which is the, you know, the little product that you had years ago that was the violator in this case, but that it would go after Drip and the other parts of your company that actually do make some money.
That was the concern. And so that was kind of the first thing I did, was try to research that. Like, is that possible? And I won't say it's impossible, but it's just not the standard. It's not typically going to happen.
In classic Rob Walling style, the first thing that you did was begin to research this and begin to learn as much as you possibly could about what this kind of patent action means and what the possible outcomes are and how you can go about sort of fighting against it.
Yeah.
You contacted some friends who are attorneys to get feedback and get some referrals to patent attorneys.
That's what I did, because I just felt so uneducated on the topic, and the law is so complicated that I knew you'd need an expert. Problem is patent litigators are very, very expensive. And the research I did, they start at about $400 something an hour. And that's even in a small town like Fresno. If you go to a big city, they're $1,000 an hour and up. So to just get someone to write a letter or to even just to look at the details of your case, you're literally spending thousands of dollars to not do anything. And that's not something I wanted to do, because I don't even own .NET Invoice anymore. Like, I had already bequeathed my half of it to my partner in that business. But the lawsuit still stood because it goes backwards, right? They look back at when you owned it and when it infringed. It still technically applies.
And I think that's one of the things that makes this kind of problem so frustrating, is that it's actually beyond your skill set to solve it by yourself.
Right. And if someone had emailed and said, hey, this is infringing, it's like, let's have a conversation. I can have a conversation and we can work something out, and we can work out whether it's a compromise or just something. But if it's like, there was no pre-conversation. It was like, boom, there's a lawsuit. You're being sued in the court of this state. And it was like, what do you even do with that? And there's all these 50-page documents with all this legalese. I genuinely, without getting a lawyer involved, I don't even know what the next step is to that.
And it's not a human problem. Like you say, you can't actually have a conversation with someone and try to kind of go point by point and rationalize and justify and explain and understand. It's this non-practicing entity, this sort of non-human thing that's sending you this email that spells a lot of trouble and a lot of money without your ability to use any of your normal natural skills to try to get a problem solved.
That's right. That was the issue. Freaking out. I kind of lost the afternoon that day, actually, just because I couldn't focus on anything else.
And you came home in bad shape.
I was pretty upset. I was just trying to figure out. I kept thinking, like, what? This is not going to end things. You know, I'm not Rob Walling destitute working at McDonald's next week. But it's just like, so what are the real troubleshooting things? Like, what can I do to get around this? What can I do to fix this? What are the worst case scenarios, is what I started thinking. And I knew that when people settle with these guys in advance, like most of these, the patent trolls want just a check up front. And when you do that, you just pay them a portion of what you made on it. And I was thinking, even if I have to shut this product down, which again, I don't own it anymore, so that would be a challenge. But even if I had to wipe it from the face of the earth, worst case, that's what would be done.
And then you continue to play out worst case scenario. Like, what if you have to give back a portion of all that this product made in the state where the suit is filed?
Right.
So again, continuing to play worst case scenario actually made you feel better, because you realize that you don't have any customers in the state where this lawsuit was filed.
That's right. Yep. And so that was kind of funny, actually, right? It suddenly became, once I started putting those puzzle pieces into place of, they're not supposed to be able to go beyond the gross revenue of the thing, which they weren't even going after all of .NET Invoice. It was like one version, particular version of it that did a certain thing. And that particular version had sold almost nothing. I mean, it was like literally hundreds of dollars a year, and it had netted negative because of some other expenses. So it just became more of a thing like, if you're suing for this as a patent owner, this is not the one you'd want to sue, because there's just no money there. And it just became more and more obvious that this was probably not something that they would want to follow through with.
So you ended up researching this particular company that had filed the suit against you. What did you do? You went looking for attorneys who had successfully defended against them?
Well, that did happen. I mean, there are blog posts written about this particular company, and I tried to follow up a couple leads that didn't go anywhere. There was like some stuff was unpublished. And I don't know if it had been cease and desisted, but there were like blog posts that had disappeared from the internet that were kind of still in Google, which makes you a little bit wary, right? But what had actually happened is it's like lawyers seem to have a, it's almost like Google Alerts, but it's for law. And it's not a Google product, but it's just something that monitors lawsuits. And so all these lawyers got notified when this lawsuit was filed, and several of them contacted me. So I think I got like 10 emails the first day, and three of them were from legal firms that were currently defending against this very company and against this very patent. And so they were in essence saying, we already have defenses designed for this patent and we're trying to invalidate it and blah, blah, blah. So if you're interested and you need defense, why don't you give us a call and let's chat?
Okay, so on one hand, that's really helpful and convenient. On the other hand, what a freaking game. It just feels like such a game. Like the moment that this is public record, automatically people are coming to you to recruit your business to defend you from this patent troll.
Yep. It feels a little bit like, wow, boy, the law is really complicated to kind of keep the common person from being able to understand it so that we are forced to hire really expensive legal counsel in order to sue someone or defend against someone. I'm sure that's just a conspiracy theory, though.
Yeah, that's clearly.
Doesn't sound like reality.
All right. So one of these people contacted you and you ended up following up with her.
Yep.
And what happened from there?
She just gave me really, really good advice. I mean, she basically, I told her that this thing just doesn't make any money. And she's actually the one that clarified. She's like, pretty much the most they'll get is like a small portion of the gross revenue from a product. She told me what the guidelines for it and the percentages of the generally accepted numbers are very small. I mean, they're in like the 5% range of gross profit or gross revenue or 10% or something. I mean, it just, the more I learned about it, the rosier the picture got, as long as they were reasonable on the other end. Because in theory, they could have just kept saying no, 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 and forced me to hire a lawyer and cost me a bunch of money just to defend myself and win. That would have sucked. But the more I learned, the more it seems like, boy, if they're rational on the other side, they're just going to bail on this because this doesn't make sense for them to do anything about. This doesn't make sense for them to continue with this suit if they just knew the facts. And so she gave me the advice. She said, you know, you can hire a lawyer, but you're going to pay thousands of dollars just to get them up to speed. You should consider just talking directly with the attorney who sent you the email.
And that's what you ended up doing, responding to the attorney and explaining, we don't have any customers in this state.
Yep.
We don't make any money anyway.
Nope. Not for this particular version of this product that you specifically called out. It's the only one that fit the description of the patent. I like sent him a screenshot of Excel spreadsheet that was revenue and loss for the past year. And then I told him what the previous year was and just said, there's just not much money to it. We've already removed it from our website. And so I kind of just pointed out, like, it might make sense for your client to just withdraw this because I don't think this is probably worth anyone's time. I said it in a much more tactful way than that, but kind of just tried to show the facts and then ask that they withdraw. And that's what they did.
And in a sparkling strike of rationality, they did that.
Right, because it isn't worth them paying a lawyer to pursue a case that's not going to yield them any money, which is the sad part of this, right? Because these, in general, patent trolls tend to send out 100 or 200 of these at the same time, and most of them don't pan out. But the ones that do and the people that do rely on that patent, they get a bunch of money from them. But it's worth their while to do so, which is really a case for that we need patent reform here in the States, because this is catastrophic for actual companies that are making money from legitimate software. But in the end, it worked out and they withdrew the suit and, you know, knock on wood, there was no money left in my pocket because it was just a few emails back and forth and the suit was actually withdrawn this morning, just a few weeks after it was filed.
Yay.
Yeah, it was good news. And when I got his email last week, even before it was drawn, that basically said, yeah, you know, just sign this thing and we'll withdraw it. It was a big relief for me.
Yeah, because it's been a pretty big stressor over the last couple of weeks. Obviously, the initial email that informed you that a suit had been filed was really stressful. But it seems like it's just been in the background of everything. And I don't know about you, but it made me feel really like discouraged, just sort of discouraged about the state of the world, like a little bit of existential depression, because it felt like one of those things that this shouldn't be happening. There's no reason for this to happen. Nothing wrong was done. And it was just really frustrating that it was happening at all.
That was the bummer, is that the patent is so very broad that makes me feel bad for all the other people that are surely being sued by it and can't just get out of it in this easy way. there's two really good podcast episodes on this exact topic of patent trolls. And there's one from Planet Money and there's one from This American Life that I think is a two-parter. And if this sounds scary or interesting at all, they do an amazing job of really discussing the ins and outs of these shell companies and what they're doing and how they're kind of trying to hide. The people who own it don't want to be identified because it's, you know, it sounds shady, right? And it just kind of is considered that. We really need some patent reform here to help keep companies like us, small businesses like us, from having to this undue burden of having to spend $1 billion defending yourself from a suit that is, I would just say, is not actually worthwhile.
If we step back and look at the process that you went through, I think maybe we can kind of identify a couple of helpful strategies that you use to manage this kind of a stressor. First of all, you kind of identified like, this sucks, this feels bad, this is happening, and let yourself off the hook for being terribly productive for the rest of the afternoon. You kind of identified this is a big deal and it feels really bad. And I think that's an important first step to kind of name the negative emotion, like identify this is really happening. I need to sort of shift gears so that I have this space in my head and in my timeline to be able to handle this. And then the second thing that you did was to really spend a lot of time researching as much as you could to become informed and to work your network to try to access the people that you needed to be able to help you. And then the third thing that I saw you doing was to really ask yourself, what's the worst that could happen here? And I think that was a really important one in this case in particular, because at first it was really, really scary. Like, this is going to bring down my whole business. But the more that you really ask that question with some information behind it, the more that you were able to say, okay, the worst thing that could happen is that I'm going to spend $2,000 hiring a lawyer, but there's really not a lot of potential loss that could come to the other parts of my business portfolio.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up. I think a big part of it was not letting it didn't really derail me other than that one afternoon, which was a few hours. Other than that, it was a background thread. It was something I was concerned about. Whenever the email popped up on that thread, basically them replying, it wasn't a good feeling. I mean, it made me like, oh, here, what's next? Where are we going with this? But aside from that, I was able to work and be productive. And it was a few weeks worth of time as we sorted this out before the thing was withdrawn. And I'm glad that I wasn't distracted that whole time. In retrospect, if I had been right now, I'd be like, boy, I just lost weeks worth of productivity and I didn't. And I think I was able to compartmentalize it. To be honest, it was from like experience doing this or practice, because 15 years ago, I would have let my anxiety would have gotten the best of me. And I think I would have just had a real struggle to kind of fight past it. But at this point, I'm able to deal with these things much, much easier. And I think that's just experience dealing with a lot of these things and realizing which of them are really catastrophic or have the potential to be, and then realizing which of them are probably going to sort themselves out and are not going to be the end of the world.
You got the information that you needed and you made a plan and you kept working.
I think there's a balance when you're dealing with something that's going poorly or that could potentially have a negative impact on your business. You don't want to ignore it, which I think could be the other extreme. If someone is too lax about it and gets that email and just hopes it'll go away and doesn't want to address it and archives it and waits for them to contact them again, and then you get a default judgment, which is not a good thing. I think that could be the other extreme of this, of not being anxious about things at all or not taking them seriously or wanting to hide from them. That would be bad too. That's opposed to the other extreme of being so taken up with them that you stress out, you lose productivity, you do damage to your body, you do whatever else. You know, in terms of the stress, right? I mean, stress over time can just start to kind of decay your body. I think there's some middle ground in there where you kind of have to take a look at a situation, try to be more objective about it and do the worst case scenario approach and then get your facts in line.
Yeah, we've talked about, I think in past episodes, problem-focused coping and emotion-focused coping. Problem-focused coping being like identifying what the problem is and making a practical strategy to sort of deal with the nuts and bolts of the actual problem. And then emotion-focused coping is, you know, managing your feelings about it, managing the anxiety, whether that means compartmentalizing it, putting a specific time to sort of think about it, work on it, worry about it on your calendar, and then releasing yourself from the burden of it during the rest of your day. There's a variety of strategies that people can use, but, you know, obviously you have to be, and you were, proactive in not ignoring it and in managing it, and then doing what you could to manage how you felt about it. So I think this story and this episode today just kind of highlights some of the ups and downs that come with the founder life and the way that these unforeseen events have the potential to derail you if you're not ready to do what you need to do to cope with them when they come up.
I mean, I could do a silly G.I. Joe ending, like, now you know, and knowing is half the battle.
I like G.I. Joe.
And now you know, and knowing is half the battle. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.